Griffiths is tearing the club for company, and McClint's fallen over. He prodded it towards Heskey, and now Heskey has scored as well. The two marquee men on the mark, and Newcastle back in front.
Possibly good morning to football fans everywhere around this lovely globe. This is The Sound of Football, number 127.
Yes, it is.
Yes, finally managed to get it right after several years of trying. This week we are going to be talking about, well, I should probably introduce myself. I'm Terry DeFellin, your host, and I'm joined by my colleague, Graham Sibley. Graham, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Terry.
Thank you. No, thank you, Graham. Thank you indeed. No Jan once again. He's still up to his neck in work and won't be joining us, but we hope to see him ere long. This week, the elephant's graveyard. What happens to footballers, to Premier League footballers or Serie A footballers or La Liga footballers in their 30s when their careers at their club are coming to an end? Where do they go when they're no longer required by the big beasts of the Premier League, the Manchester United, the Chelsea's, dare I say, the Arsenal's, and perhaps even the Tottenham's of this world. Well, you'll notice I'm lapsing into the whole the club name plural convention, which I have to say I despise. So I have already, you know, we're less than 2 minutes in and I've already become the thing I hate the most. But let us talk about players like that. This is off the back of an attack launched, and as we know in football parlance, attacks are always launched by Nicolas Anelka, who attacked his old club Chelsea, one of his many old clubs Chelsea, for mistreating and poorly treating players over the age of 30, and for having a culture within the club who take a view that once a player reaches the age of 30, they're no longer there. If anyone's seen Logan's Run, you'll know the story of the flashing
little red light in the palm of the
indeed,
hand.
Indeed, and they all have to go to Carousel and try and renew themselves, and they all end up dying. And Michael York gets involved, Jenny Agutter gets her kids off, and it's a much more entertaining experience than the next half an hour, I can assure you. especially the Jenny Agutter part.
Watch out for half an hour.
Indeed. One example, of course, is Florent Malouda, who, after failing to agree a move to another club, was sent to train with the reserves for a manoeuvre, what now, 30-something years old.
Yes, 32, I mean.
No one could argue that guy has got plenty to offer. Then there is, of course, the other issue of where players go after they finished at their big beast of club. We're seeing an increasing number of marquee players, not just in the United States, but also in China and in Australia. So we're going to spend the next 25 minutes or so discussing that. Graham, let us begin with the idea of marquee players, of players who have finished at a particular club, and they move on to that. Do you think that it's a shame to see club players of that experience not stay in their native league or the knee league where they've made their name? Do you think it would have been better to have had Didier Drogba playing, I don't know, for Stoke or for Wolves in the Championship?
I think there is a good argument for moving out to a far-flung outpost rather than knocking around, dropping a division and maybe losing some of your luster in the memories of the of local football supporters. I don't think Drogba would have really sat too well going at another to another mid to lower league Premier League club. I don't think I can really imagine him turning out for Wigan. no disrespect to Wigan, of course, but
you'll find that was pretty disrespectful.
Okay, yes, it was disrespectful. Yes, yes,
with much due disrespect,
into Wigan. Yeah, I don't. I think he's to see him sort of floundering around up front and being taken off after 50 minutes in a game where he's been particularly ineffective wouldn't have done his reputation, his lasting reputation in this country, any good. Whereas, you know, if he disappears off to China for a couple of seasons, whips up some money on the back of a huge contract, then, you know, jobs are good for him. That said, the case with Didier Drogba is obviously he is someone who came to England to earn money.
That's right.
So, you know, he made his name elsewhere, and then he came and got his big
contract. He's not been brought backward in coming forward about the whole, you know, I'm in it for the money thing. He's a professional, and, you know, I think given his background and given his ambitions and the fact that he is full of good works, he is largely concerned with acquiring as much money as possible.
Exactly. And I feel the same way as I think I've probably said on this podcast before about Emmanuel Adebayor. And you know, as an Arsenal fan, you know, it's the way he left, and obviously like the incident at Man City, all very ugly. But he's never been shy of saying that he's in this to play football and make lots and lots of money, and he does, you know, great things with his money. So I've got nothing really against players like that moving around. Even going to Tottenham, even. Yeah. Okay, maybe I have got something against that. But I think going around the world isn't a bad thing, and actually getting good players to play in far-flung outposts like that, world-famous players, that must be a good thing. Yeah. It must be a good thing. It is a good thing that Gary Lineker went to Japan. It is a good thing that David Beckham went to America. It put those leagues on the map. It gave them a bit of credibility, where, especially for the MLS, it had next to no credibility. And a lot of people would say, well, it still doesn't have much of it today. But it still has more than when it was just a load of players coming out of retirement, when it was like Rodney Marsh and et al.
And Pele,
yes.
Yeah, and Beckenbauer.
And Jimmy Greaves.
I mean, you know, the NASL was a bit of a joke, wasn't it, to be honest with you, looking back on it. Wonderful stories.
Yeah.
And Once in a Lifetime is a fantastic documentary if you ever get the chance to watch that. But it is basically, it was just a big jolly. There does seem to be something more sensible about the idea of marquee players. And they do appear to provide an outlet for, you know, players who perhaps their star is waning somewhat.
Yeah.
And gives them an opportunity to move on and play somewhere else while still being paid comparatively the same amount of money that they were. I mean, that's what we haven't mentioned about the idea of Drogba going to Stoke or Wolves. And I accept that, you know, Drogba was probably not the best example, which is that neither of those clubs would presumably be able to afford or meet his salary expectations.
That's very much a good point.
Whereas the Chinese Premier League would be able to.
Yeah.
So these marquee positions are quite fortunate for them, but of course they're only in limited supply.
Yeah,
I mean, depending on what league you're talking about, you may only get one or two marquee slot. In America, I think it's three. It could be two.
Right.
It's definitely more than one.
Yeah.
Not all of the clubs take up that option because they don't have the money to do so, but they do have that. In Australia, I suspect it's probably only one. I don't know how many it is in China. And I'm not sure that Japan is in a position where it does that anymore, because it's now got its own proper league. And in fact, I would suggest Japan will probably win the World Cup before England do. So they don't need that sort of thing anymore. But we might see more of that as we see more leagues emerging in other areas. We had a podcast a few months ago, didn't we? A rather humorous one about the Indian Premier League, which we suspected in the back of our minds was probably just never going to get off the ground.
Yes.
And didn't.
Yeah.
But I mean, it probably only requires someone to actually get that going, and it could happen, and we could be in another situation there. But is there a concern, Graham, that players, let's look at players who are coming up to a stage in their career where they're going to be starting to look, well, to having to narrow their ambition somewhat. Players like, let's toss a name like Frank Lampard out there.
Yeah.
I mean, could you see him taking up a position at the MLS? Do you think he might have no choice to go abroad in order to continue to earn the money that he's had? Do you imagine that he'll stay? And if he does, do you think he might have to take a pay cut to stay in England, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, there has been we've spoken about this a lot before, a reticence amongst English players to leave the country in recent times. And that's because the money over here has been so good. But because the money is so good now, there's only a few people who are going to earn these huge amounts of money. And the trouble is that some of these players have been paid so much money, no one's going to pay anywhere near it for them.
I mean, not because they don't want it, but because they can't. It's not physically possible.
It just isn't possible. So you've got players like Ashley Cole, who, while still...
He's still
contributing lots of the game.
Maybe one or two seasons.
One or two seasons. He's not going to get...
He's not going to get better, is he?
No, he's not going to get a nice big four-year contract now. He's got to be looking at, say, I've got to be in a situation where I've got to work out this is what the end of my career is going to be. He's not going to have a career in management. It's unlikely.
Do you don't think so?
No, I don't. And I don't think he's going to have a career in the media either. I think the guy is damaged.
Yeah,
and I think he's also probably got a few enemies in the media now. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
you don't mess with a friend of Simon Cowell's.
There's only one place, I think, in the country outside Chelsea that he would be welcome, and that's at Crystal Palace, who aren't in a position to take him back.
Yeah.
Because they had him on loan at the beginning of his career, and he helped them, out of a very tight spot.
Well, obviously, fourth place Palace, do they really need him?
Well, at the moment, you would have to argue no, but if we were to go up, then, we might consider taking him on loan for a few months just to help us bed in. yes, I'm sorry about that. Just delving into fantasy land there for a few moments. It's my problem. I'll deal with it. Where were we? I mean, someone like Ashley Cole, you would can imagine probably moving on overseas, though. You can imagine. In fact, it's possible that he may be advised that it would be a good idea to get away from everything. So look, just go to the other side of the world and play in Australia for a couple of years, and you'll be forgotten about completely, and maybe you can come back,
I just had this idea of John Terry going over to Australia on a plane called the Botany Bay or something.
It's a wonderful image. Yeah. He'd be an excellent Melbourne Victory player, John Terry. He'd take after Kevin Muscat brilliantly. One can just imagine the horror. But there's a player that we're talking about. We're talking about Chelsea. We will talk about some other players and also perhaps how other clubs deal with this issue. We're talking about Chelsea, and we're not wanting to beat up on them, but it kind of stemmed from them. So we'll move on to another club soon. I mean, John Terry is... How old is John Terry now? 32,
I think.
And with no apparent sign, despite his best efforts, of him leaving the club anytime soon. His public profile's in a bit of disarray as well.
Yes.
Because of all that stuff he did.
And he
seems to be in a very strong position. I mean, he does... I can imagine John Terry just staying at Chelsea, though.
Exactly. I mean, also as well, he's got the bonus of no more international call-ups to worry about.
So that will prolong his career for a good while longer as well.
It should do. I mean, it seems to have done all right for Paul Scholes, isn't it? So.
Well, that's interesting that you mention him because, as I said, we are unconscious of the fact that we're focusing too much on Chelsea. Manchester United do take a slightly different view, don't they? They tend to hang on to their players a little bit longer.
Yes, they do, and they've actually gone back to buying older players as well, which is something that they stopped doing for a while.
That's very true. Yeah, that's true. So Scholes and Giggs, then, I suppose, are your two. Those guys have been at the club since they were, not so much. Well, certainly Scholes since he was a schoolboy, and to an extent Giggs as well. So they enjoy a certain special status, don't they?
Mm.
But I think that, yes, that Alex Ferguson made the mistake of offloading Yap Stam, didn't he? He openly admitted that he made that. That he let that guy go.
Yeah, I don't know.
Figured he was too old. He was over the hill.
Well, yeah, but there was unpleasantness about Yap Stam, wasn't there? Because 4 months after he left, he was done for Nandrolone.
That's true,
wasn't he? So
well, it's probably best not to speculate.
Yeah, let's not speculate.
Draw back from there.
Please, listeners, read between the lines. If you
yeah, yeah. Next week we will cover doping in sport. The sound of cycling. if I am right, Ferguson has since then stated that it was a mistake to let him go.
Yes.
And you wonder whether or not he learned a lesson there, that the players genuinely aren't that old until it is becoming apparent that they are too old. And perhaps there's more respect for players with experience than there is, say, for instance, at Chelsea, who obviously perhaps want to have younger players, or they just feel that they're in a position to buy a player when he's at his peak.
Yeah.
And then as soon as he passes that peak, even if he's still got years ahead of him, to say, well, okay.
Yeah, it's interesting though that Anelka says this, because I mean, how old was there have been known to be buy older players, not in their early 30s, but players that are just coming up to that stage. I mean, like when they bought Deco. I mean, Deco wasn't
by no means.
Yeah.
No. I don't know how old Deco was.
Yeah.
But if you think back, that's a few years ago.
That is a few years ago.
So we have to... I mean, Chelsea, because they are so still, relatively speaking, recently moneyed.
Yeah.
Eras pass in Chelsea and they only last a few months.
Yeah.
Or at the most a couple of seasons. At this current stage, I think what we're talking about is Chelsea seem to have this policy of just like, well, we are now taking them in their absolute peak and in the moment they're
sure, you
know, or the moment somebody else comes along who's better. So
yeah,
they signed Fernando Torres effectively to replace Drogba.
Yeah,
and now there's every likelihood that they'll replace Fernando Torres with Falcao.
Yeah,
Torres has barely got himself settled at Chelsea, and in fact, arguably hasn't.
But also as well, you've seen in the recent purchases in the summer with the signing of Azard and Oscar, the fact that they're looking to reshape the midfield, and these two players have been playing
semi-regularly
in the first team. So
I subscribe to the theory. Yeah. It's not my theory, but it is a theory. I subscribe to the theory that they're just softening the bed for Guardiola to arrive.
Yeah.
After his sabbatical, the whole thing just smacks as, you know, the coach is a... He's clearly a caretaker coach, although he hasn't been given that job, and they're bringing in players that they think that Guardiola's going to be able to work really well with. I mean, Hazard and Oscar do appear on the surface to be excellent signings, particularly Hazard, very exciting player.
Yeah.
Sorry, didn't mean to get a bit hipsterish there, but
great link-up play.
great link-up play by Hazard. You know. Let's talk a bit about Tottenham Hotspur. What do you see there? Do you see they're again a club in flux? They don't.
Yeah, but then again,
they also tend to lose players, don't they?
They do, but also now, clubs, I mean, like you've got the fact that they're also now signing players from like when they signed Adebayor.
Mm.
They signed him from Man City, and because they couldn't afford his wages, Man City is still paying half his wages.
Mm. Well, that's the other option, of course, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Man City, of course, is the big gorilla in the room we're not talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a stack of players on big contracts.
They've got a big stack of players now, but they've already now, we're seeing them starting to offload the players they bought in the first.
Financial fair play is around the corner, and they're obviously that's what they're thinking about. But I mean,
a lot of that is down to the fact that they bought players when they had to try, when they were trying to attract players to the club.
Yeah, just and simply so, to make a statement. Yeah.
So when they were buying people like Robinho.
I don't know. I don't know whether Roque Santa Cruz is finally off their books, but I think for a while there was a bit of that going on as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, you think of a guy like Edin Dzeko, who is playing a role, certainly. Yeah. But I mean, you would have to say that there's probably an upgrade out there waiting. and that when he goes, with the money that he's on, and that he might be gone relatively soon.
Yeah.
And that with the money that he's on, you know, it's difficult to imagine who would sign him. He's far too young to go to an emerging league as a marquee player.
Do you think he's just marking time there until Wayne Rooney eventually does cross over to City?
Well, I'm astonished. There's part of me that would be astonished to see that happen, but I guess I don't know why I should be so naive, I suppose.
Yeah.
I have to say I'm not completely convinced that Wayne Rooney is as good as he used to be, if I'm being honest.
Well, yeah.
But you know, that's perhaps an argument for another time. I don't watch a lot of Premier League football, so I don't know whether or not that's...
That does seem to be the recurring hubbub of at least the start of the season. I think the last couple of weeks has probably done a little bit to calm that, but I don't think it really has calmed anything at all to do with that.
Yeah, there is a narrative about Rooney, isn't there? But,
well, yeah. There is. I think especially with the fact of Robin van Persie arriving with such making such a big impact immediately at United.
But now the thing is, there's a player,
yeah,
Robin van Persie,
yeah,
who again, I mean, he must be on massive wedge,
yeah.
And where does he go? He won't go back to Ajax unless it will be on some kind of part exchange deal.
Well, he's different. He's got a 4-year deal. And this is the whole thing, because it was a 4-year deal. He was never going to get at Arsenal,
no.
So, I mean, he's on that wedge for until he's 33, which for a player who's had his injury problems...
Yeah, that's true, yeah, yeah.
So 33 is probably going to be the age where he gives up.
He thinks about jacking in, or he'll take a gig elsewhere for less money and be happy to, because he's taken his money. So it's more guys who are slightly younger than he.
Yeah.
Who are considered to be surplus to requirements and let go before the end of their contract.
Yeah.
And they're kind of, to an extent, they're kind of left, well, who can afford these guys?
Berbatov is...
Well, it's a bloody tragedy.
Yeah.
Berbatov, a fantastic football player. He's had, 4 years of his career pretty much pissed up the wall, in my opinion. I know he has scored a lot of goals.
Yeah.
But he was capable of... True brilliance, that guy. I think it's a tragedy that
exactly, happened. And he's turned up at Fulham and he's fitting quite well. Only a bit ring rusty.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a real shame, because I mean we the football watching public have missed an awful lot of what he can do.
Yeah.
To an extent, he's an architect of his own downfall there, because I mean he could always have said, look, it's not working out for me. I want to go to another club.
Yeah.
And I'm certain that, you know, probably an arrangement could have been made if he was that determined. Given that he was a peripheral squad member.
Yeah.
But we are in danger of there being, I think, a generation of very talented players reaching a certain stage in their career where they're no longer required by their club.
Yeah.
And there's no one out there who can actually meet their salary expectations. Yeah. They're not quite over the hill. And
in some respects, a lot of these players are actually in their prime when they're sort of shunted off onto the bench and then shunted...
Yeah.
Off the bench,
and it's a real shame. Yeah. Now, they're obviously impact players. They can make squad play. They can make a difference. Drogba was shunted, but also played a pivotal role in Chelsea's success last season.
Yeah,
and it seemed really strange and a shame that a guy of that quality, with so much to offer still, is now playing in China, albeit fantastic for the Chinese. But I understand that he's not completely happy there, but I don't know, it's a long way away from where we are.
We don't know what's going on out there. I mean, unless you are sitting at home like studiously downloading feeds from China in some crazy turned up world we'll be living in.
There are betting websites that do stream the Chinese Premier League, so it is possible to watch the Chinese Premier League early on a Saturday morning if you ever mind to. I'm not one of those individuals, nevertheless. You know, I'm pretty certain that I know at least one or two
and
people who
we
are.
We tip your hat off if you are.
We do indeed.
If you are that person.
I think you know who you are. I mean, what's your reflection? Let's broaden things out a little bit, Graham. Maybe and talk about, you know, this notion of marquee players.
Yeah.
Currently, very much in vogue in the emerging leagues, but perhaps with financial fair play around the corner. Can we see a time when perhaps marquee players will be introduced in the more mature leagues, such as in the English Premier League?
I think it only as a self-imposed measure.
Be able to, yeah, well, I mean, they all are. Yeah, so, yeah.
I mean, as you will find at clubs where they say, right, okay, yeah, we've got one star player, okay, that's who earns four times as much as everyone else. I was trying to remember, someone quoted it on the telly the other day about when there was a star player at the club. It was someone talking about Frank Worthington. Oh, who was it now? It was on Sky Sports. And he was saying that he didn't mind the fact that Frank Worthington earned four times as much as everyone else because he was the one who went out there.
He was four times better than anyone else.
And earned the bonuses for everyone. Yeah. So without him in there, no one got the bonuses. No one got the win bonuses or the cup bonuses and things like that. So it was... there wasn't a problem of it. As there seems to be now, when people where players, obviously with the under the advisement of their agents and such, to say right, okay, benchmarking where they are and saying and pushing salaries up, and salaries have risen astronomical, but that's only because money's risen. Yes. The same way.
Salaries mainly, generally speaking, have risen according to how much money is coming in.
Yeah. So it's not anything to do with greedy players or greedy agents. I mean, no agent has ever signed a cheque for a player. Ever.
No.
They will advise on how much the person writing the cheque should actually put on that cheque, but no agent has ever written one himself.
No, and it's in their interest to try and get increase the value on that cheque, but... You know.
Exactly. They don't have control over it. No matter what, no, the clubs will try and sell.
No. Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
So I can see the fact that clubs may want to go back to this model of saying, right, okay, we're going to put everything on one or two players. How they can actually really cope with that if they're, say, a mid-Premier League club where they haven't got the added revenue stream of European football to rely on. And also, will they be overpaying for a player? Will they be paying $200,000 a week for a player who wouldn't be earning that money even at one of the big Champions League clubs?
Well, will you see younger players coming into the first team on much reduced contracts? And then slowly you'll see a transition whereby you've got a lot of Premier League clubs who have got mainly homegrown players or players that have come through the Elite Player Performance Programme, and they're on actually quite modest contracts by comparison to their predecessors, but you've got some big beasts in the squad who are
going to turn. I think you might do. I mean, one of the biggest criticisms of Arsenal's wage structure has been the fact that the likes of Danielson and Bentner, and there's a couple more there as well that I forget now, but were on contracts of around the sort of 50,000 a week mark. People were saying when the Robin van Persie contract negotiation was, well, like, get rid of them and then give all their money that you were paying for them to go on to pay Robin van Persie because you don't need these two players anyway. Which is a bit of a counterintuitive argument because the whole crux of it was that Wenger didn't want to give
one individual too much money.
Yeah,
too much pressure. Yeah.
He didn't want to offer a 4-year contract to a player who's not going to play 100 games during that contract, and I think that's the crux of it. There has to be something done with wages, and whether or not it's going to be financial fair play that does that, or whether it's just market forces that does that, or a mixture of the two.
Yeah, a mixture of the two.
It will be a mixture of the two.
Yeah. But one, a marquee player may be a way ahead there, maybe to say.
Yeah, when
you could probably afford four marquee players.
Yeah,
or even five.
The thing about marquee players is it tends to suggest that you've got a cap on the rest of the players, and salary caps are the things that the Premier League has been sort of.
Well, there's been murmurings about an introduction of a salary cap, which is always usually the way when people start talking about tightening their belts. The first thing they do is take it out on the workers. Even if they happen to be incredibly rich workers, they're still workers.
Yes.
And it's not the bosses who take the pay cut. It's always the workers, isn't it?
Indeed it is. Yeah.
Such is the way of things.
Well, once you've rinsed the fans for as much as you can, then...
Oh, yeah, and rinsing away. I was very curious to learn that, when asked... when Ian Ayre was asked about the new Anfield and what they were planning on doing, or loosely speaking, what they were planning on doing on rebuilding, you know, Liverpool's new stadium on its own site, and it being an impressive structure, that ticket prices were deemed as reducing ticket prices were deemed as unrealistic. So there you go, folks. That's everybody. So the fans and the punters always have to pay out through the nose in the end. We're approaching the end of our allotted time.
Yes.
So I think I'm going to draw matters to a close. We encourage you to engage with us on Twitter and on Facebook, and if you must, on the comment section of our website as well, on your views on these matters. Money and wages and the payment of football going forward, and specifically what happens to nearly washed up players. Where do they go? The elephant's graveyard. Where is it? and it is you know, I figure I know where it is. It's probably somewhere where you can find Emil Heskey. Anyway, on that somewhat derogatory note, we'll draw things to a close. And thank you very much for listening. And we shall hear from you. Hopefully, you will hear us again next week. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.